This week, Luke Marshall, CEO of Baremetrics, sat down with Justin Haymond, a B2B SaaS growth strategist with 10-plus years scaling high-growth companies, to uncover the onboarding strategies that transform trial users into loyal customers. Justin reveals the tactical playbooks behind successful SaaS onboarding, from understanding why people sign up for trials just to study your email flows, to building data-driven conversion paths. In this episode of our Founder Chat series, we tackle the critical onboarding challenges every SaaS founder faces, from identifying golden path actions to reducing time to value without overwhelming new users. Whether you're an early stage founder building your first onboarding flow, a growth leader optimizing conversion rates, or a product manager looking to reduce churn, this episode delivers the actionable frameworks and checklists that actually work.
Justin, thank you so much for joining me today, mate. We had a great call a few weeks ago, and I was really happy to dig into that SaaS metrics and tracking how to get things right. And I really love the article you ended up producing, and people out there should go and check it out. Master Your SaaS Metrics and Tracking, 9 Steps to Get It Right. And I think the key thing that I took away from our chat then, what you're all about, and correct me if I'm wrong here, you really like to see those SaaS founders have actionable, checklist-driven playbooks where they can actually implement that best advice. It's all well and good to talk about it, but actually doing it is the next step, right? And having a structured way to do that is important.
Absolutely. I think you see a lot of content online right now, which to no fault of their own are just more high level type stuff. And I think what people are really looking for nowadays, especially as, you know, everything, social media clamps down our attention spans, we just want actionable tools that we can implement. And so the whole idea of these sort of co-created playbooks is to really deliver small wins to businesses, and so granular in a sense that you could even put a time to complete stamp on it, something set up, throw into your business, get a win, and it's actionable.
Time to complete is interesting too, because you can get hung up on getting things perfect versus done. Having like, hey, the average time to get this done is here. If you're going past that, you're probably doing something wrong, or you're putting too much effort into it.
Overthinking it, yeah.
Yeah, so really, really like that actual insight. So I wanted to loop back with you because I had an interesting quandary last week, and I thought of you and the chats we had around client onboarding and how we onboard and retain, you know, those customers that are willing to actually engage with our product, engage with our trials. How do we get them to stick around for longer? And what are the effective ways you've seen to be able to onboard and keep customers around? And so the situation I had, Justin, was I was going through my funnel data like I do every day, every week, as a SaaS CEO would. And one of my admin dashboards shows me all of my trial signups and then the subsequent funnel. When they finish the trial signup form, they then connect their payment provider and they actually have subscription revenue in their account. So sometimes we might get a Stripe user that doesn't actually run subscriptions through Stripe. So we'll only see that they connected. We don't see any associated subscription revenue. But more often than not, our high quality leads are trial started, connected your subscription management tool, and then we see that subscription revenue data into our dashboards. What I had noticed is I was getting these, what I would regard as high quality contacts, B2B domains, real people connecting. They would finish the trial signup form, which is pretty brief. They'd get to the connection screen and drop off. And so, you know, obviously I want to analyze any portion of my funnel that has a high drop off rate. It wasn't necessarily high, but it was just an annoying amount that I thought, why is this effort going in? Anyway, I did some outbound to all of these domains over the course of a week, and a couple of people got back to me, and one in particular perked my interest. Is they said, thanks for reaching out, great product, love Baremetrics. We were just looking to see what your onboarding flow was like. We're launching our own SaaS and want to see what we should be doing. So for listeners out there, they sign up to my trial, they went through the trial signup form, they then just deliberately wanted to see what our drip was like after the trial signup. And that's all they did. They said, we just want to see the style of your emails. What are the messaging? Like, how many emails do you send? And I was thankful for the response. So I sat down with this individual. I went through our flow and I said, yeah, here's how we structure emails. You know, here's our points of contact over a 2-week period and beyond. And so, yeah, I guess, Justin, my question for you is, one, is this a thing you've seen in the industry? Are people going out there and signing up for tools just to get onto their funnel? And two, what do you think of this as a, you know, what are the things that they should be implementing, this new upstarted, you know, young SaaS company, in order to increase early retention and effective onboarding?
Yeah, so to your first question, it absolutely is. I mean, I think in the sense of people are looking at what's working and they're thinking, hey, I'm going to sign up to this SaaS. They have a good reputation. They have a great onboarding. How can we take some of their best practices and bring them over to ours? I've done that myself. I've signed up the tools like UserList, Clay, all known for having very, very good onboarding, specifically with UserList. As their emails come in, they have sort of onboarding emails and everything gets auto-tracked and put into a folder. I can take, you know, look at that for inspiration and stuff. So, I mean, certainly looking at people who are doing something a better way than you and taking inspiration from that is nothing new, but it's definitely happening sort of a lot in the SaaS industry. And as for sort of what these founders or these SaaS creators can be doing to improve their onboarding. So to me, the way I look at it, you know, if they're coming over to Baremetrics and they're saying, hey, what's working for them? That's always going to give them that template, that general high level idea, that structure. But it's really no different than looking at, you know, you could take someone else's promotional email. You still need to figure out the why behind what's going on, right? You can't just take it and swap out the words. What you really need to look at is how do you take that recipe, but then customize it for yourself, right? And, you know, if you just think of people have an allergy to a certain type of food, you can make the same type of food, but you still need to modify it for the person that's eating it. And so generally the way that I look at onboarding, and there's a couple of different sort of threads or points of discussion here, but really it all goes back to the initial customer research that you do. And one of the big things that I always ask in customer research surveys is essentially, what is it that brought you here today? Like, what did you sign up for? And letting them say that into their own words, and they're going to have really, really specific answers to that. This is sort of, there's two facets of it. There's like the emotional side of it, and then there's like the data and the metric side. So the emotional customer research side, that's where everything comes from, is what are they essentially trying to achieve? And if we take, for example, like with Book Like a Boss, you'll have someone come in and say, well, I'm just trying to sell this consulting service. So we know right away that this person who's come in needs specific access to the payment integrations. They need to make sure that they go to a service type and not an appointment, because that's free versus the ability to collect payment. They need to understand how that works, how you set up multiple payment options. So as you do it, you have people that are all coming into your tool, but they're not all there to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. And it's no different than 10 people go into a donut shop and some are there to buy coffee and others are there to buy donuts. And so you do need to figure out and segment them based on what they're doing and then give them a unique experience through your onboarding. Once you figure that out. Now, it depends on like anything you do with marketing, right? Like, just never just 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah.
You can do anything in a way where it's sort of like faster, get it out the door, just general best practices. Like, let's say you're Toyota, or you can build up your BMW. You can absolutely have a more like general onboarding that's going to kind of hit everybody. Obviously, it's not going to perform as well as when you have these segmented different pathways.
Yeah.
And so what I like to look at is from a more like data informed perspective, the ultimate goal of what you want to be doing with your onboarding survey is to look at using something like Mixpanel or Posthog, where you can look at what your actual product interactions are. Then you want to say in the last 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, whatever that parameter is, of the people who converted, of the 100% of people who actually converted from a free user into a paying user, what were the common actions that they took between them? So you want to be able to make statements like, of 100% of people who converted in the past 30 days, 60% of them did this action. And so I'm not sure how that would quite line up with yours, but if we take, for example, like with Book Like a Boss, we know that if someone gets their booking page set up and they actually get booked for an appointment within 72 hours, they're much more likely to convert. So we know what those actions are, but what if you look at all the unique actions that successful users, people who converted into a paying user, took within your app within a certain time frame, within the first 24 hours, within the first 48, within the first week, what are those successful actions that all the people took? And then you want to build your onboarding around that. So starting with the highest percentage, you know, 80% of people who converted did this, and then 50% of people converted did that. And so that's how you kind of build your pathway along, and then you sort of want to structure your whole onboarding around forcing users down that same golden funnel, that same golden stepway or pathway, to give them the best possibility of converting. And so that's really, I mean, Posthog's great for this. They're a small team, great lads out of the UK, and so you can actually just funnel out and see where all the overlap is by percentage. You can set that cohort based on only people who converted. And then you know, okay, these are the X you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 things that we need to do to do that. With onboarding emails themselves, like how do you actually then push them along that path, right? Because you have the issue of, well, there's essentially three different things. There's your actual onboarding process, right? People come in, hey, connect your account, similar to what you have. Second is the product tour. And third is email onboarding. So actually sending out emails and courting with it. And I like to keep them in tandem as much as possible. I think sort of the onboarding part at the beginning is probably a little bit more than the product tour. I find some product tours are just very overwhelming. Have them go through that initial onboarding, hitting off all those key points that you know that they need to do. So for us, we know that they need to connect their calendar. It's a thing to even functionally, you know, make it work. We know that they need to get their payment processor integrated if they're going to be using payment services. So you hit those, and then you can have a very brief product tour after that. Most people nowadays want to be able to play with the product. As long as you got the main things out of the way in that initial onboarding, then again, your product tour can be a lot shorter based on that. As with emails, to me, in an ideal world, they're as trigger-based as possible, about 80% okay. trigger-based and about 20% time-based. It really depends on the tool that you're using for your email, as well as how well your product itself, the product interactions are integrated with something like an intercom, for example, yeah. if that's what you're using. If you don't have those product integrations set up, you can't trigger those emails. Mm-hmm. But essentially, you want to be looking at people who haven't logged in for 48 hours, people, you know, sending them an email, bumping them to come back in, asking them what's wrong. If you know that one of your highest converting actions is, for example, someone, you know, getting their calendar set up in the first 24 hours, again, can you build a trigger based on that? And if they haven't, send yeah. that email to them. And of course, make it dead simple. Here's a 1-minute tutorial on how to do it. And always speak to the benefit of why they should be doing it yeah. as well. And that's a lot. We always take a very pragmatic, logical look at these actions and just go connect your calendar. But, you know, we know that people who, you know, are successful with the tool do this, therefore you should do that. And here's why you should do it.
Yeah, mate. Thanks for that super detailed answer there. I think a lot of SaaS founders could benefit from passing that out into those particular pieces. And I like the way you break that sort of three stages down, right, with the concurrent flow of the onboarding into the product tour, into the emails. I think that's a great framework to start with, right? Just portion out those parts and think about what are we doing here, what are we doing there, and what are we doing at the end. One part that you mentioned really rang true with me is sort of keeping them engaged and getting them to do the things you want them to do. I think there's two parts of that equation for SaaS startups right at the very first phase of growth, when they're trying to figure out like how to get new users onboarded. They haven't necessarily got much retention data or long tail onboarding data. They're really just selling to solve that one problem. You're kind of probably going to be throwing darts at what you think are the key things you want your users to do to get them sticky. And really that I believe that comes around, it sort of revolves around your value metric, right? What is it that you're really offering and what are your users coming to you for? Like you say, what brought you here today? You should have an inherent sense of what that is just by virtue of the problem you're solving for them. And I think, so my advice for startups in that very early day where you don't have a lot of data to sort of back your process is centered around that value metric that you have identified as the core solution to the problem that you're solving for, and get that in front of them as quick as you can. Right, get that, bring that point of time to value, that value metric as far forward as you can, get them to do that thing, to see the result, to feel the pain ease, and then you can figure out the rest as they go on. It may well be that after a few months, that's not what you thought, right? And the example I often use is, for us, we like to see them add an additional user to the account, because that means they're sharing dashboard, they're bringing other people in to look at the data as well. And we know that for us, that's one of our, like you said, the golden circle of onboarding activities for us is add an additional user or invite a teammate, we should say. That's a really interesting point. And I think, do you think that advice rings true for sort of the early stage SaaS or the startup SaaS versus someone who's trying to refine their onboarding experience?
Absolutely. So actually a quick and easy way to do that is using Hotjar. So yes. You're essentially saying we don't have product data, so we need the users to tell us what their value is, their value metric is. So Hotjar has like the on-site surveys. Mm-hmm. You start it for free. I think it's low submissions, but I used to run that on site, and you just have, it's a single question. What are you here to do today? Or what are you looking to sign up for? What are you looking to solve? However you want to word that. And just get them to start telling you. People will answer it. The conversion rate in terms of total website visitors can be a bit low, But people will start telling you, you know, what they're there to do. And so just let that run, take in as many of those answers as possible. And that'll give you a pretty good sense of not only what that value metric is, but also how you should be changing up your homepage copy based on essentially what they're saying and what the questions are that they're asking. But typically that'll give you a pretty good sense of what that value metric is. And then you just use your common sense logical brain to say, okay, what's the fastest way for my users to hit that within my product? And then build around that in the meantime.
So for us, you know, I love you raised Hotjar, just harking back to our original conversation around emulating other platforms, onboarding experiences. We used Hotjar there for a while. And I remember the onboarding space there, you get into the dashboard and you see the left-hand nav bar and then all the features that you're trying to access, whether that's the heat map or the user, the journey, et cetera. It's always, you must install the widget, right? Because that's the whole premise. If you don't install the widget on your website, you're not going to be able to use the product. The fact that I was able to be in the product, in the user experience, seeing what they would offer, the seeing the components of the application and knowing that the only thing I have to do and the only thing they're wanting me to do right now is install the widget, it forced me down that funnel. Absolutely. It might be something you forget. We struggle with this at Bear in two ways. One, like I said, we get these trial signups that then don't connect to their Stripe account, maybe because they don't have permissions. So we've recently implemented a ask admin feature on our signup page. So where you get there and you think, a lot of the time someone's been tasked to say, hey, go try out Bear Metrics and tell me what the data says, right? And they'll get there and realize they don't have permissions for the Stripe API key. We now have an ask admin function because we've noticed that flow. The second one we've noticed is when you connect a platform like Stripe or something with a lot of data that needs to be ingested, it takes time, right? Even in this day and age of, you know, computer processing power, you're still talking about, you know, lines and lines and lines of database entries and relationships that need to be built in order to provide a metric. So we do have a period of time post-connection before you get to see your data live. So we need to figure out what we're doing with our clients at that point in time to keep them engaged and to keep them around, right? What are some suggestions that you have for platforms like ours that may have a gap between the initial motivation to connect, motivation to start a trial, but then by virtue of the platform, there's a gap between that time to value? What do you think are some valid tactics there?
Yeah, so I actually made a test account and signed up just before coming on here. And I noticed the same thing, that you're essentially making an immediate commitment to, I'm going to integrate my Stripe or whatever it is, or you're basically blocked and can't go past that. And so for me, I was just curious to look around and just play with it a bit, even before putting in my own Stripe data. And so my immediate thought was demo data and sort of filling the account with demo data. So whether it's because I want to check it out before I make the commitment to integrating my Stripe, because I don't want to accidentally maybe override or bump something that, you know, if I have it connected elsewhere, or because I'm still, you know, like you said, you have that gap in time and I want to be able to play around and see what it's going to be like. And so I think that would be my big thing is, you know, play around with this demo data to see how Bear Metrics works in the meantime while we set you up. That's one. And then the other thing, and I think this is going to become more and more common, is the whole concierge onboarding service. So just helping, having some kind of service, whether it's included in, you know, people who sign up to an annual fee or it's a separate service entirely, but helping people to really reduce the friction to getting set up. And this is something you see like LandingGee does, system.io does it, ConvertKit does it, and they all have these migration services that they present in one way or the other. It's for those users who look at themselves and say, you know, I feel like my time is probably more valuable than, you know, messing around in these little settings and trying to get this working. You know, I'd rather just pay someone $50 or $100, or it's included if it's, you know, for example, on your annual plan, to have someone do it for me. And I think that's just really that removing that friction and getting it done for you is going to be a sort of a new, I want to say it's going to be coming out a lot more. I'm actually looking at making a playbook for that as well. Even with Book Like a Boss, we've noticed that, you know, we have a $97 done for you service where we go in and set up their entire booking page, all their copy, their design, we do everything for them. And those, you can see a direct correlation with people who churn less, they stay around a lot longer, they get the full functionality of the tool right there. And so I know that's a little bit off from, you know, talking about this gap of what do you do when you have that in there, but this idea of how do you just remove friction and give them that experience that they came for as soon as possible. And although a demo data isn't their data, it is something for them to get in there, start, you know, learning about how it works, maybe ask questions if they need to, rather than what do I do now? Just exit out of my tab and come back when I see an email.
And then hope that they see the email in your inbox and it doesn't get caught in spam and they realize their dashboards are ready. I completely agree. And the frustrating thing for me hearing that feedback as well is we do have a live demo environment, right? We've got a live front-facing URL, demo.baremetrics. Anyone can go in there, interact with the dummy data and build graphs, et cetera. We have experimented in the past, and it's worthwhile retesting this because it was a few years ago now. We would push people directly into that demo environment as a trial. The conflict we now have is we offer that. It's almost like we're trying to loop their decision-making cycle. We offer start now, right, or free trial or free metrics, and then see it live as the demo. Once people have clicked on that start free trial, they're in the trial process. You can tell them there's a demo, but they're expecting their data by that stage. So I think you're right. We might need to retweak when we talk about the availability of demo data and how they can use that in the short term to play around and then get an alert when their dashboards are ready. One of our sister companies, actually, TeamGate, does a great job. They're a CRM and they actually have a full suite of demo data inside the CRM. Contacts, deals, et cetera. And you can go in there and you can see like what attributes are available for my contacts. What, you know, deal stages can I edit? What are the tags that I can apply? And then it's as simple as that you can actually establish your connection in the background to import your own data. And there's a point in time where you just essentially say replace demo data with live and it will just do a one-for-one flip. And I find that really good. A really great way to get people in and using the platform and trying out the workflows before committing. A lot of people want that. So yeah, your point on services, I think I agree about the concierge. I think whether it's AI-driven or not, whether it's the desire to have handheld experience and, you know, want someone else to do it for me and I'm willing to pay for that, this whole idea of SaaS plus now, where you do see the baseline subscription plus services where possible. Some of our bigger clients in our forecasting space that we work with employ our team as essentially a fractional CFO in order to give them the reports and the nuanced metrics they want in their forecasting scenarios the way they want them, right? And again, they don't want to necessarily spend the time to learn the intricacies of the platform. They know the end product is great. They're willing to pay for that in between and we're happy to provide it. So we do have the baseline subscription plus, you know, the services fee that's kind of rolled up into it. So yeah, I think I agree with that. How do you see the role of AI evolving to suit or to complement the onboarding experience? I know you mentioned like product tours, and I think the customization of the onboarding journey is a big part of your sort of ethos around it. You can obviously draw parallels between AI enrichment and being able to implement those sort of things intelligently. How do you see it playing out?
Yeah, I think ultimately that the way AI is going to play a role in onboarding is essentially kind of like what we talked about before, asking this question when, as soon as they sign up and they come in, what is it that you're looking to do? And we kind of already asked these questions, right? You'll see in onboarding in SaaS, we'll say, well, I'm a marketer and I'm looking to get reports for my business or for a business or whatever it is. But then they just kind of drop off and those questions feel very one-sided. They just feel like it's you're providing data for the company to use. Not that that then provides you with a unique experience or a unique onboarding setup to actually get set up quicker in the product. Whereas I think that's what's going to change with AI is rather than having all these things to click through and do, and let's say there's 30, 40 actions that you can take inside of the SaaS, but only 9 of them might be relevant to you. So you're going to say to the AI, for example, if you come into something like a Book Like a Boss, calendar scheduling tool, and you know, I want to sell this service, and so okay, well, here's the 9 steps you need to take that, and so that onboarding is going to be hyper relevant to just, you know, here's the minimum of what you need to do, and then push them along that path. That's the way that essentially it's going to go, and I don't really see anyone doing that yet that I've seen. I might be wrong, but typically it's still just, you know, everybody gets the same list of the same checklist that they need to go through.
Yeah, I think we try and customize that journey as much as we can, definitely dependent on the integration that they connect to. So whether it's Stripe, mm-hmm. whether it's ChargeBee, Google, Apple, we know that there's different nuances to the data they're going to be seeing from each of those integrations. So our onboarding flow is slightly differentiated, but I definitely think we could be doing it better, particularly when it comes to in-app activity. And a really valid sort of you know, bolt-on acquisition for a platform like Bear Metrics would be something like an app analytics platform, whether it's Mixpanel or Kissmetrics, an older platform out there now. Being able to look at daily active users, you know, daily active interactions, what they're using, that's not only going to fuel the concept of that onboarding and stickiness, but it's also, like you say, give me data to then figure out what I want my users to do early on in that trial process, right?
Yeah, and I feel like people probably come to something like a Bear Metrics with a very specific question in mind. When they're coming to check you out, you know, it's how many, I want to know what people churned in the last 2 weeks. Yeah. And so, although you come and you say, hey, you know, we're going to use Bear Metrics for doing all of our, you know, our subscription metrics and everything like that, I feel like a lot of people probably have a very specific question that they're looking to get answered.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. It's you're probably right in that they don't come to us with a, we like to think they come to us for our vast array of metrics, right? The amount of metrics we can give you, and then the detailed insights we can give you in those metrics. But you're right, more often than not, we've either had someone who's been tasked to analyze a data problem or stand up some sort of reporting at all. And even when they come to us wanting to have a platform, you know, better than Excel or better than Sheets, they're still going because we are really focused on weekly new subscriptions or churn currently is out of control. So we need better grip up on churn. So therefore we need a platform play. Yeah, it's I agree. They generally come to us with specific questions. And actually this is an interesting part about our onboarding and you might have an opinion on this too. We found that you mentioned customized messaging and onboarding flows for the specific use case. We launched our Forecast Plus platform inside Metrics, right? And the unique difference here is that our Metrics platform relies on subscription management tools, like I said, Stripe, ChargeBee, et cetera. Our Forecast Plus tool is looking at your accounting software. So it can be connected with Xero, QuickBooks, or any balance sheet and P&L CSV that you want to upload. And then you can build out scenarios in there. So the value proposition of that part of the platform is uniquely different to what people come to us for metrics. Like I said, you might come looking for a platform that can show me my churn data over the last 3 months compared to previous quarter. We can give you that in spades. What we're trying to get you to think of as well, though, is, hey, we know you're looking at the here and now, but we believe it's important that you start to forecast and look forward. And hey, here's this great little add-on to get you. What's your advice for users that want to try and increase product adoption through additional parts of the application outside of those core metrics? So I know we're talking about driving the onboarding flow by the user experience, i.e. the things that people have done in the past that have seen them become stickier is this. But if I'm saying, actually, Justin, I want you to do those things so I know you're sticky, but I also want to show you these other really cool things that I think you'll enjoy. How does that play into that onboarding? Should I really just focus on the, you know, the here and now and what I want you to do? Or is there a space for me to be able to upsell that additional value?
I wouldn't do it in the initial onboarding. It's SaaS especially is so competitive and it's so easy for someone to just give up, you know, and go over to a competitor. And, you know, it's easier than ever to swap or to transfer. And so personally, I wouldn't do anything that isn't addressing whatever that core problem is that they're coming to solve in the initial onboarding and stuff like that. I would look at ways to identify whether or not they might be interested in what these other things are, and then look at, you know, whether it's through email or it's through in-app product, you know, pushing notifications through intercom or something like that, that's going to move them into it. But I would keep it very hyper-focused, solving that one thing that they're there to do in your initial onboarding. I wouldn't dilute that with anything else.
Yeah, and I think we tend to see that as well, in that we would often introduce the idea during a demo call or something like that. They're like, oh, that's great, but all we want to see is this, right? And so we realize then we're almost overwhelming them with too much value. And if we focus on just solving the problem right in front of them, then we're more than likely going to have a better conversation down the track when they have capacity to assess those other things, right? My doctrine has always been for startups, we talk about the value stick, right? And you've got the price of a platform, and then you've got that gap between price and willingness to pay. And the willingness to pay is that capacity that users will give you to say, well, you're only worth X, but I would pay Y, right? Because I'm really happy with the product. At the start, we can often get overwhelmed with trying to prove that, increase that wedge, right? We want you to show you additional value, how much value you're getting for the price you're paying. And we can often try and push too much in there and maybe lose sight of that idea that at that point in time, price may not even be an issue for them, right? They're really just worried about solving a pain. And so that's what we need to focus on.
When you do the whole value thing, people want to know that they're getting value, but everybody's saying, hey, here's all the awesome things that you're getting. What's missing at this point in time for the user is trust or belief, right? I mean, I haven't used your tool yet. I don't actually know. And so it's kind of similar to, you know, proposing to somebody on a first date. You need small buy-ins, you know, you just start with first date, get the acceptance for second date, and you go from there. And so that's, again, sort of the issue with making that big proposal at the start of that. And so I had an additional thought on that, but I lost it.
I agree. That's what we sometimes have to dial back on. We can get in our own head too much trying to show the value. We want to try and prove ourselves, right? We are a worthy partner. We will be a trusted advisor because we've got all these things available to you and you're getting so much value for this minimal cost compared to competitors. If we're not solving that initial problem, we're not building that trust. You're right. And particularly when it comes to data and reports, right? They're often coming to you with an idea of what is right or what is correct. And then if you show them something different, you're either eroding trust or you're showing them why they were wrong. And there's always going to be this friction associated with, you know, it's a change management for them. You're saying, well, the way you were managing your spreadsheet is wrong. And this leads into a conversation for another day as well around the concept of standardization of SaaS metrics, right? What is MRR? What are you including in MRR at any given time? There's no accepted standard like there is in accounting to say how you can or should calculate MRR. I have an opinion as Bear Metrics, right? We have a particular calculation. Others have a different one. ARR is the same. LTV, I've got a blog article that my CFO punched out a couple of weeks ago, four different ways to calculate LTV.
Yeah. So it's not so standard. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's again, it's one of those things where if you're trying to tell someone they've been doing it wrong and here's the way we can do it, and I haven't got any trust in the platform, or you're coming to it fresh, you're going to be more inclined to trust your own methodology, your own process before you got there. Take the time, build the trust, be a partner, be a trusted advisor. And then, you know, you'll be able to add that additional value as you go on. Yeah.
And I think as, you know, as people creating SaaS or whatnot are being heavily involved with it, there's definitely a bias when it comes to your own tool about you thinking it's very simple and thinking that, hey, you know, we can present all this stuff to them, we could present these additional options and we have all this other great stuff, but then forget that people are coming in with a very specific problem. They're not familiar with your tool, nor do they have the trust for you yet. And so that's why it's a matter of just keeping it, you know, super, super simple, super clean setup, and just help them get to that first win, whatever that is, whatever it is they're coming to solve. And then from there, then you can start sort of pushing into these other avenues or additional features or additional products or whatever you think they might benefit from.
So I guess just to wrap everything up there, Justin, what I've got from you today, we spoke about the importance of onboarding in order to increase retention over time. And I think your main points around customization of that journey, really focus on what is driving the user adoption of your platform, get them to push into that space as soon as possible and do that through that onboarding, that product tour, and then subsequent emails, and running them specifically to their use case, specifically to the attributes that you've identified are going to drive their usage, and continue to push that to them throughout that period. We spoke about, yeah, not moving too far too soon, really focus on the problem that's in front of the user that you're trying to get them to help them solve. Don't get overwhelmed with showing them additional value, build trust, build confidence in the platform, and then start to look at additional use cases. Is there anything there in that summary that I've missed, Justin, that you want to get across?
And if possible, if you are able to offer some sort of done-for-you concierge onboarding migration kind of service, whether it's included in your fee or sold for a separate price, those users will be very much hooked into you and they were much less likely to churn.
Yeah, that white glove service, that additional SaaS plus services that people are willing to pay for because either they don't have the time, the energy, the effort to do it themselves, and they'd rather a trusted expert come in and help them on that way. Justin, mate, thank you so much for re-engaging and having another chat. I'm sure we've got plenty of other topics we might be able to talk about in the months ahead. Where can our listeners find your content and hear more from you?
My site, just justinkhammond.com.
Great. And obviously follow you on LinkedIn. You've been posting some really great stuff on there, dealing with other companies as well, similar to Bear Metrics. But Justin, thank you so much for your time, mate. Really, again, a pleasure to have a chat. Really like hearing your passion for this space and the value you can bring to the client. So, yeah, I encourage anyone to reach out to Justin if they're working on their onboarding flows, their user experience, or anything around their sort of SaaS customer management space, particularly in those early phase SaaS startups.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me.